Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. Well, maybe the ringmaster. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. Our focus this week is on three cases. Missing five-year-old Haley Cummings. Actually, she's now six, I believe. Dead two-year-old tot, Casey Anthony.
Kaylee Anthony,
I'm sorry. Casey's the other one that, we won't get into that. And missing 26-year-old Louisiana resident Zachary Pittman. Joining me to help unscramble the events of the last week, I'm joined by a great panel. I'd say awesome, but then I'd sound like Jane Velez Mitchell. In the studio is my wife, Jen. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
From upstate New York, we have the crime doctor himself, author and broadcaster Denny Griffin. Denny, it is always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Simon. Glad to be back with you in the panel again.
And how is the crime business? Busy?
I hate to say it, but crime is booming.
It's booming, okay. from the state of Maine, where I've heard that even the lobsters are putting sunblock on this week, is investigator Peter Hyatt.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Is it true that the lobsters are indeed putting on SPF 30?
It is hot up here. We've been hitting 90 repeatedly.
Wow.
We're not used to that.
And from Orlando, Florida, we have Kaylee Anthony, reporter, Dave Neckel. Dave, how's your day going?
Oh, not too bad, Simon. It's good to see, listen to you and everyone today. It's hot down here too. It feels like it's about 110 outside. So I'm staying inside, in other words.
Yeah, me too.
It's raining here, but when it rains in Mississippi, it just means it's getting hotter. Also joining us is Ace Reporter and the Director of News and Programming for the Sky 97.3, TJ Hart. TJ, it is super that you could join us today.
Thank you. I'll be here as long as I can.
And we also have a surprise guest, none other than the infamous William Cobra Storbs. Cobra. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure's mine, Mr. Simon. Hello, Jan. Everybody on the panel. Everybody out there listening. Hello.
Hey. As always, our phone lines are open. The number to call is area code 646-378-1120. Or you're more than welcome to ask your questions in the chat room. Okay, let's get started. I want to open today's program with a case that no one seems to really care about, the search for Zachary Pittman. He's not cute. He's not female. He's not young. But he's been gone for a year. I will update everyone with the latest that we have. There was going to be a search for Zach. It was cancelled. Unfortunately, one of the major contributors had to deal with a medical emergency, and so it's been rescheduled for another day. I won't tell you exactly when that is, and I certainly will not tell you where the location is. Now, But there is one more interesting thing that happened this week. And I want to get the panel's view. Mayor James Levine of Pearl River is not in any shape or form implicated in the disappearance of Zachary Pittman, but his son Ricky did get into a fight with Zach 2 days before he went missing. I'm also told that that fight was over a girl. Zach and the girl were due to move into a mobile home together. Zach went missing. Guess who moved in with her? And it doesn't take a huge amount of effort to figure it out. Anyway, that's an aside. That there was a town hall meeting this week, and our illustrious mayor, James Levine, was trying to railroad some business through, but not even the alderman would go with it. Well, other than Marie Crow, who, by her own admission, claims she only handles land easements and knows nothing about town business. So, the real trouble came at the end of the meeting. Levine would not let a resident speak. When the resident persisted, he lost it and shouted for all to hear, "I hope the Ku Kluxers get you too." Ooh, I view that as a career-ending move for any mainline politician. If you did that in Washington, you'd be done. So I want to ask the panel about this. I know that I have not forewarned you at all. Peter, what do you think of a mayor, a politician, saying that to a resident?
Well, two things. One, it's obviously political suicide to make such a foolish thing, but politicians are generally creatures of higher intelligence, and I have to wonder at this point whether or not he threw that at you, deliberately, and seeking to perhaps even throw a red herring out there and take the attention away from what it may be legitimately. So I have to question the authenticity of it, and I would need a little bit more wording around it to find out where it stood.
Dave, what
yes.
would you make of such a statement?
Well, I would think that the guy's looking to retire from politics, but, you know, there are still pockets in the Deep South that, you know, they got a, I guess they have a feel for their constituency, and they'll sometimes say what they feel will help get them reelected. You know, but I think that that sort of thing should be illegal if you're going to talk anything that even points to racism of any kind.
Denny, you and I have been around the block a few times. I mean, wouldn't you view that statement as a career-ending move?
I'm not familiar with the turf there, but certainly it sounds like, what did Peter say, political suicide. In probably most places in the country, yes, that would be pretty much the swan song.
And TJ, I know you've never heard anything about this story, but I mean,
well, that sentence got my attention. Yeah, it's a career ender. You know, and I know what Dave was saying too. I mean, the movie Rosewood that was on HBO about the Klan and Klan activities. Rosewood is only 30 miles to my west. I know all about those pockets. Believe me, they're very, 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 very small, and it might ignite something with a handful of folks. But for the most, they're going to turn their back and nose on it.
Cobra. Not even you would say such a thing.
No, I would not. And let me ask you a question just for clarification purposes. The gentleman who said this, his last name was?
Levine.
Okay.
L-A-V.
Just as I saw. Is he a Jewish feller?
No, I don't believe so.
Well, the way I heard it seemed like a Jewish name to me, and
yeah, it sounds like
all the I felt for all the Jewish brothers out there because they've been through enough turmoil, and for a Jewish brother to stand up and to bring such a hatred against someone else and using his race and his name sound like behind it, it just it's appalling. Whether it's a race ender, whether it's a political end for him or not, man, him and Mel Gibson must be speaking.
Mel Gibson.
Yeah, and,
They partners.
I've been trying to get hold of James Levine for weeks, but for some reason he opts not to return my call. And,
well, was he so sure that they're not going to come get him? You know what I mean? Usually when you send the boogeyman, I know this to be a fact, usually when you call up the boogeyman and send him to somebody, after he accomplishes that mission, he usually turns back around and gets the one who sent him.
Okay, so that's really all we have in the way of updates for Zachary Pittman. But you can bet your bottom dollar we are still working on it, and we have some good leads, and we're going to continue.
And also, we'd like to ask anybody that if you have any information to please call us or email us or let us know something.
It's all on top of it already, being the fact that these two were going to move in. Men do strange things for women. And
hey, by the way,
somebody
typed in the chat, Levine, as in like Avril Levine. You know, it could be that French spelling.
Regardless, I think he's trying to hide the fact that his son, you know, just on the mere principles of issues and him to say that, I mean, to me, you may as well just say, yeah, my son did it, and don't worry about it. You may as well say that.
Simon.
It's the spelling is L-A-V-I-G-N-E.
That's about as French as you can get, yeah.
That's French, yeah.
Well, yeah, it is Louisiana.
This is true.
Simon,
are you trying to Creole? I mean, create problems?
Oh.
Creole.
He'll know.
His wife is from Louisiana. He better not be.
I did have some boudin yesterday, so.
Nothing like that.
Okay.
Simon.
Yeah.
Simon, I just before you move on, I just wanted to mention you said at the start this is a case that probably nobody seems to care much about. And I don't know the Pittman family personally. I do have sympathy, though, for anyone who's in that type of situation where you have a loved one, you know, a family member disappearing under these kind of circumstances. But I'm interested in the case for another reason rather than just Mr. Pittman and the Pittman family, what they're going through. And that is the whole concept of what families have to do, and thankfully most of us don't have to go through this personally. But when they're thrown in the situation by law enforcement of having to conduct their own investigations, and what it is like when you don't have, in most cases, the financial wherewithal or the expertise to suddenly know that a case isn't going to be solved unless you do it. And that really puts you in a, you know, it's a very bad position to be in. Unfortunately, there's a lot more families that have to deal with that than one would think here in this country.
You know, not only that, but they are also given, I mean, they put, like, they get scared of where, you know, stepping on somebody's toes, but then at the same time, they're determined to find the family members, child, son, husband, father, whatever, and, you know, they have to fight through politics at the same time, and it's not
mm-hmm.
fair because they shouldn't have to.
You are right.
Jen and I have talked to some family members, and They're decent people. You know,
they're hardworking people. That honest, they make, you know, they're honest people, then they work just like everybody else do. They don't have everything handed to them on a silver platter.
And Frank Cobra, you might enjoy this one. The mother, Christy, said, you know, if I had the money, I'd get a PI involved, and I know just who I'd get.
Oof. Well, I'd love to help the lady out, but I'm going to tell you what. You said something very powerful there a second ago. When civilians have to step in, whether by necessity or attrition, step in and try to do what we would think that law enforcement should be doing, it opens up. Well, as I was seeing my life flash before me as you were saying that last comment. I said, oh, my God. I said, please, you know, it's bad enough that folks get twisted into this, family, friends, or just some good Samaritan, somebody trying to help their fellow man out to solve one of these life mysteries, and then to reap the repercussions of things such as I've been through, and I'm probably not the only pregnant one running around the world like that, but my God. And I feel this family. I feel for them, and I could say that I do know what you're dealing with. I know exactly what you're dealing with, and it's a long road, and you got to be very careful. And you got a guy up there like this Levine dude popping off at the Klan and doing this kind of stuff. Lady, be careful. Whoever you are, never met you, but be careful, Mama.
Oh, okay, let's move on to the next case. Kaylee Anthony. Oh my, what a week. I was not sure that I wasn't in a dream watching the idiocy unfold in the courtroom. Jen, what did you make of it?
I thought it was a big joke, and I'm sure that by the end of that hearing that Baez was kicking himself for allowing it to get there, because I don't think he got the answers he wanted.
Dave, I understand you were actually in the courtroom. Were you absolutely amazed like the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, even more so. I mean, it was because you're right in there, you're living it, you're breathing it, you know. You kind of get a feel for what's going on inside that courtroom. And I don't know what Cheney Mason expected to get out of Debbie Polisano, but it kind of backfired on him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he said to the defense team, look, we'll get her. She'll tell us what happened that day. It's like they didn't talk to her beforehand. Well, what are you going to tell us? Maybe they can't legally do that. I don't know. But they should have, you know, Cheney Mason, of all people, should have talked to her and said, look, we're counting on you to give, do you remember the times? Do you remember all, you know, there were incidentals that she just didn't recall. And I'll tell you one thing, what you couldn't see, when she walked out of that courtroom, as she walked and closed the gate behind her, she turned away from the Anthony family and never once laid eyes on them. And I thought that was a very telling thing. So, okay, go ahead. Who's next?
Peter, you've been grumbling since the hearing. Is Mason on the way out?
I think so. In fact, that was one of the questions I had for Dave. He was able to answer for it now. But I think that although I don't have the strong linguistic indicator like I did with the Angel of Death Row there, Miss Lyon, I think that Mason is on his way out. But here's maybe what happened with the supervisor's testimony, because this was perhaps the most embarrassing thing for Cheney Mason, is last month Brad Conway told us in his own language that there was going to be an issue with Kate, with Cindy telling the truth under oath. He used language that indicated that Cindy telling the truth is a sensitive issue, which in terms of verbal polygraphy, just like a polygraph machine, telling the truth is not sensitive. Lying is what causes sensitivity. He told us that it was a sensitive issue. So when Mason got her up on the stand, why did he not know that she was going to testify that not only did Cindy know that there was a dead body in the car, but Cindy articulated it repeatedly. And this was just a humiliation for Mason. And I am thinking, trying to put the A plus B plus C together and come up with D, I am thinking that Brad Conway told us the truth in Cindy is going to be a tough sell. Did Cindy lie to Baez, to others, and said, yeah, I didn't say anything about a dead body to the supervisor, don't worry about it? And Baez, who is known to do sloppy and lazy work and not show up for things and not do preparation work, did he simply go on Cindy's word, bring up this witness, have him just completely undrape the defense, and then the prosecution is asked, your questions? No questions, Your Honor. We have nothing to add. A bomb exploded in that courtroom. So I'm wondering, was this the work of Cindy Anthony in her lying? Because at this point, in terms of deception, Simon, she can't stop herself. She can be in front of a courtroom, and she has the ashes of Kaylee around her neck declaring that she's alive. This is not an insane woman. This is not a person in denial. This is a woman who is going to go after that one juror who may have some sort of sympathy for her. And she, I can't see how perjury charges cannot be brought against her at some point.
Okay, Denny,
yes.
You and I have watched the very best of work in the courtroom. You know, the best of the best. If American Idol had a spin-off, you know, American Lawyer, my guess is Baez would have been publicly humiliated by Simon Cowell. What's your ideas?
Yeah, well, as the rest of you were talking, I remember an old saying about a good lawyer never asks a question that he doesn't already know the answer to. And that popped into my mind. Yeah, I've questioned Baez's ability and competency ever since this thing started, virtually ever since he got involved. And we've speculated from time to time about, is he just incompetent, or is there some kind of a method to his what appears to be madness? And is there a strategy at work here? And I can't come up with any. Maybe he's got some secret that nobody knows about, but I just... like you say, I think Simon Cowell would have had a ball with him on a reality show.
TJ, I know that your station doesn't follow this case very closely, but I'm sure that, you know, you get bits and pieces coming in. I mean, what did you make of this hearing?
Well, a few jaws dropped, but then again, that's starting to become commonplace with this trial. I mean, our local guys don't cover this, but our state guys in the network certainly do, and every time they come back and they get on the phone with us and talk with us about this case, you can just hear them shake their heads in disbelief. What a circus. It's just one of these things. The cast of characters there are beyond the pale. And what we had with Mr. Hyatt saying that about the mom, the grandmother, I should say, Cindy. Yeah, she's on a roll. She can't stop herself. I mean, that's pretty. You know, is she lying? Well, did her mouth move? That's pretty much the sentiment down here.
Okay, Peter, the ruling was that the 911 tapes are in, and I'm guessing that also means that the transcripts from this hearing are in. Would I be correct in that guess?
Yes, I think we all were pretty much unified in our opinion last week on the program that we said there's no way that they will get this removed. The bigger question, Simon, is why is Baez continuing to file these motions? And how long will Cheney Mason remain on this team with this type of humiliation? Boy, if you have time, I'd love to talk about his interaction with Kathy Bellich.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
sure.
You know, I did have a bit of a conversation. We took two breaks yesterday, Thursday. One, I had a chance to ask Jose Baez something because I had written a post, excuse me, that basically had a baseball theme to it, where I gave the experts coming into town baseball positions. That was the day of the All-Star game, and it was unfortunately also the day that George Steinbrenner passed away, and I'm a real diehard Yankees fan, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, so I asked him during this break, as we're, he was passing by me out in the hall, I said, Jose, are you a baseball fan? And he says, ah, I'd love it. And I just knew it. I sensed that he was a real baseball fan. But then the second break, I had a chance to say something to Chaney Mason. And that was when the judge brought up the case of Lurch versus State, and I believe it was in Oregon. But don't quote me on that. I knew because at that point, when I think the defense brought it up, or the prosecution brought it up. It doesn't really matter which side brought it up, but the judge was very aware of it. And right then and there, it told me that he was doing his homework, and I knew which way the judge was going to rule. And in the hallway, I talked to Chaney Mason about it. And I said, you know, when he brought that up, it told me that he's going to rule that way. You know, he's going to rule with the prosecution. And he said, well, let's just wait and see. But he didn't seem like he was not really focused on the case or alienated by anything. He seemed like he was really into the case. Now, I think that my opinion of watching him in action is more or less like I think he finds these motions, you know, the hearings kind of like boring. He'd rather just get right down to the nitty gritty and let's go and get this thing to trial, get it over with, you know, and that's basically the way I read the guy. So, I mean, when I saw him in court, he wasn't he certainly wasn't in top form again, you know, which I haven't seen him in top form yet, but it's almost like he's got too much on his plate with this case and the other one that he's handling when he's already said that he's ready to retire. So I don't know. Peter, what do you think? Hello, hello?
It's gone very quiet.
Yeah.
Peter is obviously...
I'm sorry, I got cut out there a little bit. I think it's great having the eyes there in the court where we have someone from the panel that is listening to those things. In terms of what I think is being played out there, is that judge came in prepared, because no one speaks extemporaneously the way he did. He was well prepared. This is a smart man. And I think some of your listeners are probably afraid that we're being set up for such a poor defense of Casey Anthony that there'll be a mistrial. And I think Perry is on top of these things really, really strongly. I was pretty impressed. So.
Okay, TJ, again, I know this isn't your area of expertise,
yeah.
But this whole trial is becoming a farce.
Right. Oh, very
fast. Hasn't even gone to trial yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's going to happen in your view?
Well, you know, they've already discussed the matter as to whether or not they think that they're going to move this out of the Orlando area. Guess what? I think it's going to stay there, and for an obvious reason. Who hasn't heard of this case? And what's going to be very hard now is the 911 tapes. So whether or not they've been admitted or not, guess what? That's a red herring. That's one of the questions that people are going to be talked to about when trying to get a jury seated in this case. Should they be kept out of the trial? You know what? That seems to be evidence that needs to be admitted into trial. But all the same, it's pretty damning. And it pretty much seals the deal. Now, if it's one of those things where they're not going to admit it for God only knows why, here you have a pool of jurors, and you're going to ask them, are you familiar with the 911 tapes of this thing? You're going to spend a good month trying to seat a jury. And I don't care where you put it. If you put it in California,
well,
Texas, or Alaska.
Well, they got to get them from Central Florida. I mean, from Florida, but because it's state versus Anthony. So,
whether you hold the trial someplace else or not.
No,
you know,
the trial's already been basically decided. They're going to much keep it here and move the jury from somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
They're
going
to
bring
it
from
it to Satsuma.
What's that?
They're going to move it to Satsuma.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Orlando.
Hey, what about the, one of the trials with the Lunsford girl from Citrus County all the way down to Miami?
Yeah.
So maybe trying this in the panhandle, like Pensacola, might not be out of the question.
No,
but
you can't do it that way.
It has to stay right where it is.
No, you can't do it that way, and I'll tell you why. It has to match the demographics. So you can't take the trial. You got to either move the trial to a demographically similar area, or grab your jury from a demographically similar area. And that's why. See now that you know, Tampa was one of the examples. Well, the problem with Tampa, Baez claimed that it was too close, too much a part of Central Florida. So the judge didn't deny that. But I think the judge is really leaning towards keeping it here in Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
And
they,
just
they
bringing
want
in
to
a
well,
trial. Bringing in a jury. I'm sorry?
Yeah. I said, yeah, I mean, it's prudent that it should. I mean, I don't see why they should get a change of venue. I mean, like I said, everybody's heard of this case. If you've got a TV or a radio or picked up a newspaper in the last 2.5-3 years, you're familiar with it to some degree. So it doesn't matter where it's held. But I think that seating a jury is going to be a tough one if the 911 tapes are disallowed. And,
no, they're allowed. He decided that. That was
that
hearing
was
about. So
okay,
all three. If the and the judge based it not on the truths, you know, of the first and second 911 calls,
mm-hmm.
but what it led to, and the third one is really what the prosecution was saying all along. We don't necessarily want it for what Cindy said as much as we want it for what led up to Casey coming on the phone, and that's
gotcha.
Where she started to spin her tail. So,
gotcha.
You know, and so I mean they're going to use him. And the thing is, what the judge said is based on that Crawford versus Washington, and it was a Supreme Court decision where who was it? Rehnquist didn't really agree 100%, but it was Antonin Scalia who wrote the decision on it. And really, what it was is that case, although it wasn't really the same because it was there's an issue of whether a wife can testify. You know, where the police take the husband and wife out and interview them separately. Well, the husband says when he stabbed this man, he was charged with stabbing the man, attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
Then the man says, look, I thought he was grabbing for a weapon, and I defended myself. Well, the wife said something totally different. She said, no, I don't think he had a weapon. You know, so, no, it wasn't really. So the problem is you have that issue of whether, the wife can testify against her husband because, you can't really do that. The wife can't, that kind of statement that was out of court, even though the police interviewed both of these people, you can't just sit there and admit it. So, but the thing is, in this case, Cindy will be available to testify. So,
okay.
So the defendant can sit there and question that. Can question Cindy. Are you sure? Through attorneys, of course. You meant what you said. So, if Cindy wasn't available to testify. You know, there would be a different motion filed because if she died or something, then they would go over the legality of it at that point. But right now, it's admissible, and Cindy will be there, so will Lee, and they can sit there and say what they meant upon cross-examination by the defense attorneys, if that makes any sense.
It does, and thanks for the clarification.
Sure.
Okay, one of the reasons that Baez wanted to move the trial was by none other than my wife.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, one of the reasons. Yeah, it's because of an article I wrote. I don't remember which article it was, but it was put in the court records that that one of the articles from BNN that I happen to have wrote. So.
Well, that's interesting.
Well,
I didn't know that.
It wasn't only us, though. I mean, it wasn't.
No, I think, like, you know, like, It's a Mystery was one, maybe Nisi, whatever. There were several. But, you know, I happen to end up with a big whammy of them all, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
well,
but.
I think Bias, more than anything, drawing straws on who he can blame.
Can you hear me, Jan?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
I said, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, because I just changed up and put my headphones on there, and I wondered if you could hear me. I says, Jan, write me a story. Let's see if we can get into the file.
Okay, maybe we will.
Okay, before we leave the Kaylee story, how much damage was done this week? The smell of death question. Dave, sorry, not Dave.
I don't smell like death.
I mean, how much trouble was that area?
I didn't see that as a trouble area at all, and I'll tell you why. Because when you're talking to a police dispatcher, you're basically talking to the cops. Okay? You know, what if she text messaged someone instead, you know, a police dispatcher? It'd be the same thing. So the deal is, it doesn't matter. She smelled something, and it smelled like death. And ultimately, it became police, you know, and like the Oak Ridge labs that tested and found death in that vehicle. So I think everybody knows it doesn't take much of a brain to figure out what a dead animal smells like. Everyone smelled a dead animal, so everyone has smelled death. Does that mean if I smell death, I'm not qualified to tell you that I smelled death? Of course, I'm qualified because I've smelled death before. Now, if a human smells worse, so what? It's still death. You know, I could be a mile away from it and smell it, or I could be 10 feet away from it and really smell it. It's still death. So I don't think that's an issue at all. It wasn't an issue.
Let me throw one in there. I don't care much for Cindy Anthony, but if I was in this situation to represent the daughter, I would have her statement thrown out for the simple reason that she was angry on the 911 tape. She had just been arguing with her daughter, and she was PO'd, and she did whatever she could do to get them out there. And I smelled death, and you could tell the anger in her voice. So she probably did smell death. But I would have it thrown out because it was an angry statement made.
But it wasn't really an angry statement when you think about it, because she had just found out that her granddaughter was missing for 31 days. And Casey had no inclination to go and get her. You know, I can't go get her. You know,
she was mad at her daughter, big time mad at her daughter, and you could tell that because they'd been fighting just prior to her making that call. And to me, I would argue the fact that she was angry and mad at her daughter, and basically, yeah,
well,
you killed him, you shot him, you did it.
No, she didn't say that. But you know what? That was addressed in the court, and the judge still ruled for admissibility. So,
well,
you know.
She did all but admit and say that she only said what she said to get their attention, to get them out there so she could make her daughter tell her something.
Well, you know that's not true. I mean,
no, but I'm just saying she did come out on there and say that she did that. Okay, so that would be to me, that would be saying that she was falsifying a report to 911, and that's against the law. Do that to begin with.
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, that is an interesting point. So,
I mean, either way, she did do something wrong either way. So,
I still say she was angry. I still say she hates her daughter, and her daughter hates her.
Yeah, well, I do believe that, too. I think that Casey is so jealous of Cindy's attention towards Kaylee that she couldn't handle it because Casey wants to be the center of attention. I mean,
well, she still does.
Like her father.
It was an adversarial statement.
Yeah, but when her father first told her when he went to visit her in jail when she first went in. And he told her, he says, you're the boss. And she says, no, I'm not. Not anymore. I mean.
Well, the whole family appears to be, the whole family appears to be very adversarial against each other. Even Daddy, when he went in, he goes, listen, guys, I'm going to tell you. It's my
well, life. Yeah, he, you know, I'm going to write about that, you know, because I sat right close to them for a,
right.
a reason, you know. And,
yeah.
And I saw the dynamics. Now, you know, I'm not going to write anything about it that's going to mislead anyone or send anyone into a frenzy over who, you know, how anybody hates this person or that person in the family. I'll tell you one thing. When I got there, you know, I was in before everybody else. I went in with the media people, and then Cindy and George walked in. And you could tell, like, you know, you didn't even want to mess with that woman. You could tell that she was a nervous wreck. She looked like she probably, if you held a thermometer up to her face, she was probably like 140 degrees, you know. And then I was in a row. Now, I didn't know. I walked in. I sat down with a couple of media people. And then they got up and started talking to other media people. And there I sat. And then she came in. She asked me if I would mind moving to the row behind me, you know, where I was sitting. I said no, because I really wanted to make her as comfortable as possible. And then I walked in and walked down and followed my media friend. So and sat down further, you know, in. But it gave me a really good view of what was going on there. And I'll tell you, when Cindy got off that stand, she was shaking. She was shaking like a leaf, you know. And I think that part of it was where she didn't want to say something that would hurt her daughter, but she knew that she had to say things that would hurt her daughter, you know, because she did admit that it smelled like a dead body in the car.
Okay. Can we just switch gears temporarily? I know that TJ doesn't have a huge amount of time. So let's move on to the Haley Cummings case, and then we'll come back to this. TJ, what's new and exciting in the Haley world?
Well, not a whole bunch new, not a whole bunch exciting, but it looks like we are going to have court appearances with Tommy Croslin this week. Also, Ronald is scheduled to make a court appearance as well. I hate saying this because some of the people I speak with are incredibly right most of the time, but when they're wrong, they're off a mile. So when it comes to Tommy's sentencing, he can get anywhere from 3 years to possibly, PSI and probation, or up to 30. But it's going to be anybody's guess, roll of the dice. His motion for the aggravation and being questioned without an attorney present, of course, was continued and called off a week or so ago. But we're going to look to see what shakes with Tommy here this week. Also, Ron is to make an appearance, I believe, tomorrow in Putnam County. And that ought to grab people's attention to see what the result out of this proceeding yields. I did get the chance, however, this week, I was actually covering another story where $12 million worth of drugs were basically taken off the street. The trafficking chain went from Mexico to Texas to Florida, and the Florida part was right here where I live. Well, Dominic Pape, a detective with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, who's also been involved with the Haley Cummings case, happened to be at this press conference where the drugs and the chain of command of this drug bust went down. I got him off to the side, and he goes, oh, he saw the microphone, he saw me coming. He says, you probably have another question. And I said, yeah. I said, it's about the Cummings case. He says, I will only tell you what I can tell you, and that's it. And I understood that. He made it very clear that he was not going to give out a whole bunch of information. I sent it along to you, and it was, I believe, heard at a blogger at BNN. And, folks, the man really appeared like he wanted to say something but obligated not to. He would not give a timeline on when a resolution could be found, but the eyes were telling a story that perhaps that indicated sooner rather than later. I pick up on physical cues, much like Mr. Hyatt picks up on verbal cues. And the body language was not matching up to the audio. So I felt a little bit of hope that something moving this case along in order to find some resolution to the Haley case will be forthcoming here in the next several days, if not the next several weeks. And that's really all the more I have to report on this case, other than everybody is hoping for a quick resolve and to get the guilty parties found and to get this child found so that things can be taken care of properly. At this point in time, even those who have been holding out hope that the child is still alive, and, you know, I'm guilty. In my heart of hearts, I really want this child to still be alive. But I've come to the conclusion that she's probably not. But everything needs to be put in place. Everything needs to be put in order. Guilty parties need to be put in jail.
Can I ask you a question, TJ? Just a quick one?
You sure can. Yeah.
Well, do you remember in the beginning, I remember thinking that, you know, and the rumor was that a relative wanted to take her away because they didn't think she had a good life there.
Yeah, that
you know?
Was one of the theories, believe it or not. I've been, and I still keep a warmer, you know, a pot on that that warmer, hoping to God that that's the case, what I was calling a Good Samaritan abduction, if there ever was such a thing.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think the risks are now, or the odds, you know, in favor or whatever?
Kind of slim. Honestly, kind of slim. There were some avenues. I mean, there was a fellow who did some talking, and, you know, Bill covered probably every avenue of that when he was on the case, too, Cobra. There was a fellow in Anthony, Florida, who lives just a little ways from John Travolta, who claims he... You know, he might have seen a girl who looked exactly like Haley playing out in a yard, but hardly ever saw her after that. And he was working on a bike, but he was also smoking some weed that day. So, you know, you got a lot of these loose ends and you can't even show up.
Yeah.
So,
is somebody washing dishes?
No, I suspect it's one of our panel that has their phone held somewhat strangely. Maybe
okay.
They have an iPhone 4.
Ah!
Oh boy!
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw one of them. I saw one of them sitting next to me. excuse me, Mike DeForest from Channel 6 had one. He had like a little rubber, band around the antenna. That I said, did they send that to you? He says, no, I had to buy it. I said, how much was it? He said, $25. But now they're going to reimburse people that bought them. But anyway.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, this case has been heartbreaking. It caused me to have some serious bouts, and I'm finally coming to grips with this, folks, and I feel comfortable because I'm getting help. Suffered bouts of depression covering this case. I've never had a case affect me like this. You cover all kinds of things from political corruption in a reporter's career to an abduction to a murder to fires to, you know, all kinds of ungodly things. But I don't know how I allowed myself to get so close and so wrapped up into this. But... it has taken its toll as it has on many people. So, I'm letting my reporters do the work, and I pop out the stuff when I can. You've noticed that for several months my feet have not been on the ground in Putnam County. I've not even crossed that county line.
And
wow.
In fact, you know, TJ does great for days on end, and then I call him.
It's the case, Simon. It's not my friends. My friends are what keep me sane and would keep me proper and would keep me realizing what is important and what I should be focusing on. And I thank you and Jan and Cobra and everybody and Danny for being there, being pals, and to our new friends here, David and Peter, thank you. So.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
My pleasure too, TJ.
There's a big date on August 13th. That's
yes.
The drop-dead date for Misty to plea out, as I understand.
That, and you know something? She's got this really weird relationship with her attorney. I mean, it's kind of a love-hate deal from the outside looking in. You know, she loves him when she needs him, but by golly, if she's going to do something, she is just so headstrong and so defiant. And, you know, the woman has a handful of personalities with her, and each one of them is defiant, though. I mean, that's...
I think she's spoiled, too.
That could very well be it as well. But, you know, I've never seen anybody as hard-headed as this young lady. By golly, when she makes, her mind up that it's going to be her way or no way, she really doesn't care where the chips fall, it appears. So it's going to be interesting to what happens. I mean, on videotape from the jail, she says, well, you know, they got us. They got me doing this. They got me doing that. But then she was quick to point out in the very next breath, but that one wasn't me. That was Donna. But that one wasn't me. That was so-and-so. And almost to the time you think that she's got some grip on reality, here comes that defiance again. So I don't know if she's... I don't know if she's going to play ball in this.
Peter.
Yes.
Do you think that her defiance has something to do with the fact that she's not smart enough or she has no comeback, so she has to, you know, it's like backing somebody in a corner and they come out fighting? Do you think that's part of her personality?
I think that she's a street rat. She has stepped on her wits, and I think that she expects to continue to overcome, still get out of all this. I would like to have the hope that, and TJ, hold, I can't, because I know that the 911 call is accepted, and it's accepted on a very high level, to be a reason why. But TJ said he's in Child Protective, and over 1,800 interviews with child molesters, both medically and mentally, it's destructive and it's still. And I fear for you. And when we
Peter, you're cutting out.
Yeah, you are, yeah. Right.
Let me try a different phone then.
Well, back to you, Simon.
All right. That's better. We've got pure silence.
Yeah, that's... Well, where were we?
Okay, Dave, give us your opinion.
You mean on this Haley thing? Well, it'll be interesting to see how she pleads. I mean, I didn't really know that she had some kind of a love-hate relationship with her attorney. But, you know, I could tell from watching interviews of her in jail, you know, when she's segregated, she's no longer got her people around her to lend support. I think she's definitely, like, lost. You know, I don't think she's the, all that. I don't mean to insult her intelligence. I just don't think that she ever went to the point where she learned a lot of common sense. And because that she never really learned anything, you know, like that she's she needs that help. And when she doesn't get it, she's backed into a corner and she comes out yelling and screaming. That's just my opinion on it. But I see her. She talks like she's spoiled.
Mm-hmm. That does come through. I'll tell you, and perhaps Cobra can add into this, but every time I've spoken with her, she can be charming, she can be sweet, and then she can just be cold as ice and shoot those daggers right through you and just be so hell-bent, defiant. And it's the oddest transformation you have ever seen. I think she's pretty street smart, but beyond that, I think the coping skills are, they lack a bit.
Hey, can I ask a quick question, Simon?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, for anybody who would know the answer, well, first of all, I guess probably to Dave for this one. I was just curious, of course, there's been a lot of emotion in the Anthony case, especially initially with the when the thing first broke. But did you notice anything around the courthouse in the way of, like, protesters or people with signs and that type of thing?
No, was it nothing like that.
Nothing, huh?
No. No, you know what? Nobody pays much attention to it. I got there an hour early figuring that, you know, it would be pretty packed, and I wanted to get in, you know, and get a seat. And then I ran into, you know, one of my media friends, and we hung around outside for a short time and then went inside. It was no big deal. It was not busy. You know, even when we got up to the courtroom, of course, nobody could protest there. But but outside, nothing. And then when it, I left just before it was over, but I saw some TV people milling around, and but nobody out there, you know. As a matter of fact, there's been no protesters that I've seen there at all at any of the hearings. The first one I went to was in October, you know, of last year. So no, but I, you know, but the thing I did want to say about Casey reminds me, or Misty reminds me of Casey, like a little bit. Because of that spoiled attitude, you know, it's automatic that they get special privileges.
And
so,
PJ, would you buy into that, you know, Misty's spoiled?
Misty's spoiled to a degree. I think her dad has always tried to be a guy who, you know, baby, you know, he, you know, Hank Sr. is an interesting fella. He comes across as a nice enough guy, but he's always lacked a lot of focus too. And I think in some way, probably a very non-traditional way, I believe that Misty could be, you know, described as spoiled.
Okay, Peter, I have to ask you. You're the expert on the written word. Would you view these two young ladies as spoiled?
Stephen was dead.
Uh-oh. Okay, we seem to have lost Peter. Let's go to Cobra. Cobra, do you think they're spoiled?
Well, they're spoiled is what you and I would say if we're talking to each other. Possessed is more like it. Both of them are possessed of the freaking devil, and it's quite evident here. Both of them missing a child, and they're busy about drugs, parties, and everything else. Being spoiled, possessed. Is not giving a shit. So I would say that they were more possessed and spoiled, but they are cut from the same cloth. I do believe drugs played an important part in both of the demise of two small children. Very simple.
Cobra, is that an iPhone 4 that you
speakerphone?
iPhone 4. How about that? Can you hear me better?
Do you have me back, Simon?
Can you hear me? Because somebody else's phone's cutting in and out. It ain't mine.
Simon, get me back on.
Did you have your finger
you
on
there,
that antenna,
Mr. Main? No, it's not.
Yep.
I don't have an iPhone 4, but I do have an iPhone. But I think what it is there's some turbulence out there in the airwaves someplace, especially when you start asking about these two kids and their relationship to like each other. They're both the same. I think drugs play a part in both of the child's disappearances. I think both of them are what America would call spoiled, but demon-possessed is more like it.
Demon-possessed, yes.
Demon-possessed, brother, you need a good preacher. Go down there and knock them out. Somebody go down there and pray over them or something, because they're more concerned about, you know, I didn't do this or I didn't do that. Hey, apparently there's still a missing child, and, of course, Casey's still in denial that that's not my child. I don't know who you found in the bag out there, but that ain't my little girl. Shit.
Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you, the last conversation I had with Misty was a bizarre one at best, because this is where my relationship with the folks behind the scenes at the Nancy Grace show started coming apart. First of all, I was at a television studio in Jacksonville, and I was to appear with Ronald Cummings' mother, Teresa Cummings, a very nice lady. And here was this young gal sitting in the back seat of the limo, and she finally gets out. Well, it's Little Missy. All right. Well, supposedly at this point in time, she was MIA. She was on the loose. No one could find her. All right. Yeah. But,
found her.
Yeah, well, I knew she'd been back in the area for a couple of days, but that wasn't fitting the narrative. Anywho, sitting out in the green room watching the Jane Velez Mitchell program on the big screen while we're getting ready to go in for our interview on Nancy Grace, she was talking to me about, you know, how she had taken some time to kind of get herself, you know, in tune with her new life, as it were, that she had gone to a preacher, she'd become a member of a church, and this and that, and that she was turning her life over to God, and we've heard that a little bit in the jailhouse tapes, also followed by some of the nastiest four-letter words that you ever heard. But she also told me about her life story and about how her folks, that she blamed them for being, in her words, drug addicts, and they never stayed around very long, too often in any one town, and that school never became too much of a big deal because she knew she was going to pick up. Here's another excuse, you know, to quantify why you never learn anything in school. Why bother getting all excited about school when you know you're going to have to change one probably here in a year or two? But that was, again, was somebody else's fault. Mom and dad being drug addicts, somebody else's fault. And then she was, after playing this really saintly type of thing, and poor pitiful me, she says, you know, Ron and I watch headline news all the time. We watch Nancy Grace and Jane Velez, and we watch that Mike fella. And I said, really? I said, why would you do that? I said, that seems to me it would be very upsetting. She goes, oh, we laugh at it. We just can't wait to hear what people have to say about us. And then she looked right at me, and she goes, and I wasn't at no party that night either. And I said, well, very well, you know. And then she wouldn't talk to anybody after that. She got real quiet and just stared at the wall for about the next hour. It was kind of weird, kind of eerie. I mean, seeing these things and hearing these things come out of her mouth with the different personalities unfolding and then go into that. And it was like fade to black. But I got to tell you, it gave me a heck of an insight. That's the longest time that she and I ever had a chance to talk, other than a few questions here and there. So it was really kind of weird.
Peter, I have to ask you your thoughts on what TJ just said. Oh, yeah, he's no longer with us.
Uh-oh.
Dave, what would you make of that statement?
Oh, I don't know, you know. I really don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's not like I'm one that never is at a loss for words, but I don't know how I can elaborate what was just said, you know?
It was a hell of a roller coaster ride that 20-minute conversation was. I mean,
I'll bet it was.
Man, it covered the spectrum, and I'm just sitting there listening. I'm not asking a whole lot of questions. I just basically said, "How's it going?" And off she went.
Yep. Well, I can tell you this from a one-on-one mini interviews with her. I agree with TJ 100%. You never know which way it's going to roll out, and you know he spoke it as a true veteran standing there talking to her. I mean, basically all of our conversations, same daggum thing. And that's why I based my opinion on demon possession.
Okay. Denny, you've been very quiet.
Yes. Denny said, I've seen a lot of mobsters, but I ain't never seen no mobsters like this.
Right.
He's flat out gangsters down here, buddy. Gangsters with a capital G.
Hey, I was just thinking, you know, of course, we talked about the Anthony case earlier. One thing, has it been decided one way or the other yet whether that case is going to be televised, the trial?
I don't know who you're asking, but...
Anybody who might know.
Well, I talked to some of my, friends in the media, and they said, yeah, they see no reason why it won't. This judge is not afraid of television cameras, you know, because I think it'll come right down to the judge making the decision. So with Judge Strickland, I don't think it would have been any kind of a problem. I wouldn't have even questioned it. But when I asked about this judge, Perry, yeah, it'll be televised, is what they told me.
Now,
of course, these are television, these are media people, so they're thinking that way.
But yeah, with Court TV, True TV, and everybody else like that, I mean, it'd be like the second coming of O.J. for some of these folks.
Oh, I did say something to True TV, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And I was told, they don't see any reason why not. So,
TJ, before I lose you, I just wanted to ask a question of you, the panel, the listeners, the bloggers, everybody out there. It seems that these folks up here in Satsuma, Orlando, everywhere else, had absolutely no problem coming up with defense, coming up with an attorney. And the cover man has a request. If anyone knows of a great attorney, civil or criminal, somebody that would like to get on band here and let's get after it, I need one. I need a Billy Badass, guy that's not afraid of a TV camera, not afraid of going after some insurance companies, and not afraid of getting his hands dirty in some political issues. Now, whether that's criminal or civil, and somebody hopefully that's well-trained in the federal market, because I don't believe in any state lawsuits. I believe in federal lawsuits because it involves folks from different states, and it involves players that's higher on the food chain than what we're used to dealing with here. So if anyone happened to know of an attorney that wouldn't mind getting his hands dirty, maybe contact Simon and get my email or get my phone number and dial me up and see if I can't make him a rich feller.
I don't need to be rich. I've got jam.
Well, unless you're coming on board, brother man, or getting a piece of the action, I was talking about the attorney, damn it.
Oh.
But we don't mind making you rich too, Simon. Hell, we'll give you all the what the hell happened? Well, this is what happened. And of course, you know that there's a saying to your good friend up there in Mississippi, trying to get involved in one of these cases. You better study the cost before you jump out there, because I'll tell you what we've been into this thing, TJ. 18 months, and I'll tell you what, I'm still battling them. I mean, I got my bail bond license back, thank God for that, but I mean, now, I mean, you got other issues, and I think it's about time. I've been standing still, and everybody's been pop-shotting me. I think it's time for me to duck behind a rock and start throwing some howitzers their way.
Wow.
Don't you think you're going to want to have an attorney close to your neighborhood? So,
I don't care where he's from. As long as
I'm just saying, I mean, if you're going to meet with the attorney,
we'll figure a way to meet. I don't care if he's close to my neighborhood, in your neighborhood, or some hood. Oh, he could be from Belgium. I don't care. As long as he's ready to get down with the getting down, he ain't scared of nobody.
Can't
be chicken livered.
I'll contact you probably later today or tomorrow with some information.
All right, brother man.
I might have for you.
Peter, do we have you back on the line?
I'm here.
Yay.
Okay. Peter, you can get on that too, brother. If you know a fella up there in Maine, I don't care where he's from. As long as he don't mind getting his hands dirty and he don't mind getting in the political arena, and TJ already knows, if we get somebody to step up, we're going to change the whole outcome of both these cases.
Are you looking for an honest attorney?
Listen, the Bible says that attorney's a hired liar. I don't need him to lie. Just go in there and tell the truth, you know, and just present the facts before a federal judge and see what happens here.
Oh, honest attorneys.
I knew that was going to start a wigwam of events. But, you know, there are some out there that don't have to get down too awful. And I'm going to give them an honest case so that they can go in there honestly with a smile on their face and go, now what do you got to say? And I think it'll change how BNN's reporting. I think it'll definitely change HLN's standpoint. HLN will be going, whoa,
we should have gotten involved in this a long time. Now, I have reached out to the general guys, John Morgan, Mr. Mark over there, Nijane, and, you know, some of those guys, they've already got their hands full with these sideshows. And I'm gonna give them one that's going to take it right to the point. And, you know, I represent Richard Grun in Orlando, so you can only imagine what that will bring forth. And, of course, TJ will tell you that I've been more involved, and I've interviewed everyone. One thing that, going back to Tommy getting ready to plead this week, I'd like to say, I don't know how that fella could have spent 4 days with me out in the swamp showing me everywhere that him and Joe Overstreet went, and then get on Dedgum phone and tell his granny that he helped tie a rope around this little kid and throw it in the swamp. Now, to me, that's accessory to a murder or something or another, and how you could only do no time or 3 years or something, and nobody's even brought charges on him. I mean, he admitted to him, to everybody, that he did that, to much to my astonishment. And how in the world, unless they flat don't believe that, what happened there, Simon?
Oh, okay. That's a good question you bring up. Peter, he basically admitted that, you know, he was at the crime scene. He's admitted that, you know, he helped dispose of the body. And where's justice?
I think we're going to wait until the time comes, but I don't know if this got through before, if there was a problem with the line. When someone lies, they have to presuppose that people are going to believe them, and that's where that type of arrogancy, they sound like they hold the world in contempt, and Misty has been surviving by her wits since she was a child, and so it may not be such a spoiled brat mentality, except with her parents, but there's a presupposition that you're an idiot and I'm smarter than you, so therefore when I flip you this lie, you're going to buy it. And that's what I see in Misty, that's what I see in Casey, and that's what I see in Cindy Anthony as well, is that they think the world is stupid and they can sell whatever they're going to sell and you're going to buy it because they've been doing it since they were children. So I just wanted to get that across. And if I could, Simon, the 911 call.
Mm-hmm.
It really matters, because what it may do is it may force not only Mason off the case, but it may force Jose Baez into a corner where the Zanny the Nanny is going to be their defense. And here's why. The 911 call is in. The anger is in his excited utterance. It goes in. It's part of it. In that call, prosecution has shown that there was a progression of lies going on. We can't get Kaylee now. She's sleeping. We can't get Kaylee now. She's with the babysitter. We can't get Kaylee now. Mom's not buying it. Guess what? She has been taken, Cindy said. Taken, that presupposes that someone took her. That is the kidnapping. Take that along with the testimony where the supervisor said, no, Cindy said there was a body in the trunk. Cindy said, you know, she wouldn't open. I asked her if she could open the trunk. She wouldn't answer me. It smelled like a dead body. And then take Casey's first response to the police. Where is Kaylee? She's been kidnapped by Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez. I think that the 911 call is going to lock the defense into this, and they have no choice but to defend that infamous non-existent nanny. That's one of the things that makes the 911 call so terribly relevant in this case.
Ouch.
Well, we all know that Zanny the Nanny was Xanax, so you're saying they're going to have to start defending the drug industry, because that's who Zanny the Nanny was Xanax.
Now, Cindy wrote in a letter that Kaylee is alive, and she's in Brooklyn, New York, with Zanny and the stepbrother or something named Hector. This is while she has ashes around her neck.
But let me ask you something, if I may. Well, if the defense is going to go with the Zanny route, why aren't any of their investigators out looking for her?
Well, that is why didn't Jose Baez drive across and look at the detective search records? He's a lazy man who is in way over his head. He has gotten rid of one attorney, two attorneys now. He's going to get rid of another one. I think Mason's going to quit one way or another. This guy has no defense for her. And an old-fashioned type of defense would have been this, is we got to be out there and we got to be looking for Zanny the Nanny. And now that he has completely shot her credibility by saying Kaylee's alive and sticking with it, these people are forced into a corner. They painted themselves into this corner. There is no more Richard Grund. There is no more the meter reader.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if Richard Grund is brought back into this case somehow by this defense.
Oh.
You know, and with his son, you know, Jesse, too.
Bad day. Bad
yeah.
day if they do, my friend. Bad day if they do.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Bad day.
But, you know, this defense, in my opinion, is not afraid to grasp at straws. You know, I've gotten over my anger over what they did when Mason filed the motion asking for Judge Strickland to step down. Because I'm not a grudging person, but I have to stay on, you know, on a kind of an even keel. But to me, it was a very stupid move because they ended up, you know, you don't ask for a judge to be replaced midstream, and because you don't know what you're going to get. And
that judge was a very, very fair judge. Now, I don't know this new judge, but that was a dumbass move.
Well, he's very fair, too. I wouldn't say that either one of them is more fair. The only thing I would say is that they went from Strickland to stricter. You know, that this judge, Perry.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he's a stricter judge. And if anything, with Lyon's departure, there's a week opened up right there because the judge, both judges agreed to start the trial May 9th of next year because the prior week, Andrea's daughter is graduating college. Well, you know what? Her daughter is still graduating college, but she's not going to be on this case. So there's a week whacked off of it right there. And, you know, where the defense might have gotten away with Strickland, hey, can we just leave the date? I think that Judge Perry's one to say, let's get this ball rolling. You hear him in action right now. He says, I don't care if you're not done by these deadlines. You know, basically, there's hell to pay. So, you know, it's not going to be a pleasant ride. For why they did that, I don't know, but they did.
Oh, okay, let's reach out to the phone lines real quick. Someone coming in from the infamous 111 area code.
111.
Police. Or Skype.
Skype could be. Yeah.
Okay, Skyper, now's the time to talk. Nope. We lost the Skyper.
I think the Skype skipped.
Yeah.
What's the reward? I'll go get him.
There you go.
What's the reward?
Yeah, we're going to track down these Skypers.
Skypers or snipers? I don't know what you got out there, buddy.
Well.
Oh, here's the Skyper back. Okay, Skyper.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? I wanted to know why OJ got banned.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
I'll just hand that over to my wife.
OJ got banned because he was warned over and 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 over again not to call names, not to start trouble in there. And the last straw is what he did when he came. Well, he made a remark, and I don't remember the exact words, but accusing somebody else of coming in there, making another remark or whatever. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he started it, and I got tired of it. Then he come back twice after that using foul language, and he won't get back in now.
I think you did a great job. Thank you.
Oh, I thought they were talking about O.J. Simpson, for God's sake. I didn't know who they were talking about. O.J. getting banned. I said, when the hell did he get banned from?
I could rattle on and on about not just him, about the whole chat room comment section.
Yeah, in fact, why don't we spend 2 minutes on it?
All I'm saying is that these people that claim that they care so much about Haley and finding Haley, they sure come in there to bicker a lot with the other ones, and everybody wants to be number one. Everybody wants to make it a popularity contest, and it is not a popularity contest, they should be there only to discuss trying to find out how to find Haley and what happened to her. And I got tired of it, so we shut it down.
Amen.
And they only they asked for it, is all I can say.
Jan, did you ever send that one checker back that got on there and started raising all kind of hell, said Cobra been lying, he been lying from the beginning? I said, well, ask him to write all them supposed lies down and, you know, give me a fair chance to say what I was lying about. And I ain't heard nothing back. I was going to send him up there to Peter and say, Peter, you figure this one out.
I don't know, Cobra. I have went through so many names here lately that it's got my head spinning, and
Only thing I tell them is there was no need. This case had too many things popping off. I mean, it sounded bizarre as hell, but if there's any lying going on, it was about where is the kid and who's got the kid and who had it and this and that. There were so many other people lying. I didn't need to tell no lies. All I had to do was just report the lies they were telling me. But shit.
Well, there's a lot of people that all they want to do is cause trouble for others, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that's not what that's not what the comment section was supposed to be about to begin with, and they just ruined it for everybody else that was there for the right reason.
Right. If they put the crayon down long enough, they could go out there and get involved in the case and really get into some trouble. Right, TJ?
We lost CJ. I think his battery died.
Jan, what did you shut down? The chat room or the blog?
The comment section on the article.
On your blog, okay.
On Blogger News.
Yeah.
The Haley thread. I'm not going to put up with their crap no more. I mean, it's not just one person. It's a lot of them, and I just had enough of it.
I think the drugs is a pretty sensitive topic, Jan. Now, that seems to be one that really brings people's personal feelings up to the surface.
Well,
hope the resolution will be seen.
Well, like I said, we're keeping it down right now until they can calm down and figure out that this is not a popularity contest. Simon and I have been accused of just keeping this all going to make us a name for ourselves, and that is not what we're there for, and they should know that by now, and I'm tired of them causing all the trouble. And this is, they won't have as many on there, but that's not why we're doing this to begin with. We're doing this to try to help find this baby.
Be careful, because somebody might come along and start a Jan Ain't Beautiful website.
They can say all they want about me. Like I said, I'm not there for anything about me or Simon. We're there just to try to help find this baby. And, I mean, some of these people come up with some really good ideas. And, I mean, it's like I tried telling them all, this is not there. This is not a whether or not you're right or you're wrong. It's all possibilities that you can look at.
Right.
And if you don't like what one says, too bad. Just, go on. You don't have to argue with them.
You know, it's funny you mention that. It's funny that you mention that, because the comments are just as important to this sort of a website as the post that you write, because of the incredible help and ideas that you get from people out there.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's a shame that this is, that the ones that just can't handle it and want to do nothing but cause trouble has ruined it for those that have been given helpful ideas about it. So
they're everywhere.
I will offer my 2 cents, and that is, I'm more than happy to shut down comments. Period.
Well, if that's what it takes, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, the shame about that is that there's so many excellent contributions, and there are things that only a multitude of eyes can really pick up on. When I post some analysis of statements that are, I've been following it for months now, and they're getting sharper, and when I miss something, I get called on it very quickly, and so there's a lot of use to that as well. Like it almost feels like there's a certain amount of people that have been at that site. For both of you, Jan and Simon, that are really caring and strong people, and maybe just a few people that are projecting themselves into things that are making it difficult. But I hate to think that the intelligent voices and the passionate voices would be silenced. I think it's part of what makes the even this show special, is that being able to go in that direction.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Case in point, Nancy Grace wouldn't have a show if she didn't have some folks calling in, commenting, and sending it to another level. I mean, come on.
Whoa, back that up to statements. Okay, Nancy Grace does not take comments that have not been sanitized.
They have to be screened.
Really?
We don't.
You mean you can't
that.
Just call in and pop off the cuff?
No.
No. Well, I didn't know that.
When was the last time you watched Nancy and something was bleeped out?
Well, the last time I did that was when I threw a rock at the TV when A.H. was on there. That's about the last time I seen her. I said, she's going to let anybody come on there and talk.
On the subject of bleeping, let's go out to the phone lines and see if we're going to need to bleep something. Someone coming in from the 716 area code, what's your name and what's your comment or question for us?
Hi, my name's Tom from Niagara Falls. My question is, when this trial goes, when it starts, will Cindy be allowed into the trial? Because, I mean, she's going to be testifying at some point. You know how they did that at this last hearing?
I don't think they'll let her in the courtroom if she's a witness. If she's
Until she testifies.
Right.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, and I'll tell you why. Because, it depends on what's going on there at the time. She's not going to know an awful lot about if there's technical information being, evidence, like forensic evidence. That wouldn't affect her. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's going to depend on what kind of a witness they got her classified as.
Well, she's going to be a hostile witness. She's a witness
right.
for the state. But I don't know if it would be. I mean, she has, she's been, I think what they're going to ask her are questions that are pretty cut and dry. It's stuff that, like, for example, these admissible 911 calls, okay? Well, what is she going to say if she hears what somebody says about bugs on the bones? You know, I mean, I think there has to be some kind of a, there could be, like, as the trial progresses, as they move toward or closer to an area that fits Cindy, perhaps at that point, like they did the other day with moving one out and the other one in. So, but I don't think that she has to stay out of the entire trial, because I think she's got a real interest in the trial.
What one more thing, I followed this case from day one, and I mean, if I was if I heard this evidence and I was on a jury, I mean, everyone thinks she's going to be found guilty. It's just what punishment she's going to get. But I'll tell you, after hearing that one case the other day where the lady attempted murder on her husband, where she shot him twice in the garage and she was found innocent in a Florida court, now I can't say that. I had, up until that verdict in Florida, me being in New York, I always had this assumption in Florida that the courts are tough and their juries are more common sense than take California, But when this lady was found, she looked surprised, and her lawyer.
She was shocked.
I don't remember her name, but I remember following it when it was happening last year, and her trial took all of, 2 days? I think it's like a bigger case than Casey Anthony's, forensics and, you know, as far as crimes. You know, here she burned the house down with the husband in it. But anyways, now I don't have that warmth of knowing she's going to be found guilty. That's gone when I heard that verdict. If I was Jose Baez, I would want that jury, whoever their jury consultant was. That's who we should ask for the money from the state, you know, to get to hire for her. Because
they do have someone for that purpose that visits Casey in jail, you know. So
right, yeah. This woman, she's been seeing her since the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is they ought to get that the one who did that lady, because how she was found innocent, I'm flabbergasted. To me, even though it's not well known,
well,
that's as big as OJ was being found innocent. You know, that's how flabbergasted I was when I heard the innocent verdict, and how surprised OJ was. This lady and her lawyer, it was the same thing, and it being in Florida, now I don't know how Casey's trial is going to turn out, you know.
Well, I really think it's a case of that they're going to go after the evidence, you know, that's circumstantial. That's what this defense is going to be basing its whole premise on, not looking for a Zanny or anybody. That's why they haven't been looking for Zanny, because they're looking at all the evidence. And I think you're going to see it go in that direction. So you've got to remember that because of that, it's more of a thing of the state has to prove its case, not the other, not anything more than that. The state has to prove that she's guilty. So if they can confront this evidence, you know, and attack it, you know, that she might get off. I doubt it, but she might.
I'll tell you, I heard your comment about Cindy being shaky after testifying. I hear everyone talk about all these lawyers, but not so much about Linda Drain Burdick. But that lady knows her business. She has that voice that comes through to you, you know, and she can tear you apart. And you know, like how I interpreted Cindy up there is she's going along with whatever lawyer is up there. She's going along with whatever their flow is, you know. You know, when they asked her, you know, if she had viewed these documents, and she says, "Oh, not for a year," that is so much bull. Here's a woman who went into that deposition for the Zenaida thing, and she knew line and chapter and verse. You know, of people's, of whatever the evidence was. You know, when he asked her, how did you prepare for the case? I mean, she could quote, you know, what line and what page. You know, this woman knows everything front and backward. It's just, it's like you said, she has to say some negative things about her daughter, but she's trying to minimize it as much as possible.
Okay.
I'll let you go. I took up enough of your time. I appreciate you, and I just was wondering about that with her having, if they kick her out of the courtroom before she testifies.
Thank you for calling in. Okay, let's take one more quick call. Someone coming in from the 219 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment?
My name is Dina, and I don't have any questions. I just want to comment about how much I appreciate what you guys have all been doing. Simon and Jan, I think your panel is excellent on Sundays. I try not to miss. I read your blogs as much as I can, and Peter, I've been going to your blog now, and I just love it, and I want you to keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Well, that was
good
very
word.
Nice.
You're someone that likes us.
So you guys have a great week, okay?
It's nice to know.
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
Peter, do you get calls like that all the time?
We get a lot of encouragement at the blog, even some very strong disagreements. But we have one fellow who is just an expert in substance abuse, and there are a couple of psychologists. There are some legal minds there. So there are areas that I have weakness in that is really kind of nice to have the extra strength. So it's been going well.
Can I ask Dave something?
Sure.
From the chat room, somebody's asking me to ask him what, since she was in the courtroom with the Casey Anthony hearing, they want to know what's up with the aisle seat being so much higher than the other seats in the courtroom.
The aisle seat? Oh, yeah. You know why? Because they're temporary seats. They bring in extra chairs.
That's what I kind of thought, too.
Yeah, it's like at a church or something where they bring in, you know, you got the pews, and then basically that's what that is. You know, you sit in there, you know, and then you got, they're separate chairs and all, but they're all like a theater, movie theater. They're all secured. And then they generally bring in for her hearing, you know, spare chairs for each row. And, you know, there's also a balcony that holds maybe, what, 60 people, I would say. I haven't been up there, but I thought maybe it held 40 or 50. And I asked Bob Keeling from Channel 2, and he said, oh, no, it holds a lot more than that. He's pretty sure. So, and that was pretty well filled, too. It was a busy day. It wasn't just what you're, you know, people you were looking at downstairs. So,
okay, well, question was answered.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Denny.
Yes.
What are you thinking? And more importantly, let's do a shameless advert for you. What are you up to, and where's CrimeWire headed?
CrimeWire, we're going to do on a week from today. In fact, at 9 p.m. Eastern, we're going to do a special one-hour show about medical examiners and coroners, and we're going to take a look at some of the problems people are having dealing with these offices, and in some cases where they're absolutely refused to look at new evidence or change a death certificate. So we're going to get into all of that and what can be done, what options people have to help fight when they're fighting the system. So that'll be a week from tonight at 9 Eastern.
Where is it going to be?
It's going to be on our Blog Talk radio show.
Okay. You need to give us a little bit of a clue as to how to find it.
Okay.
Yeah.
www.blogtalkradio.com/CrimeWire, CrimeWire. And we're going to be
next
doing
next Sunday at 9.
Next Sunday at 9, and this Tuesday at 9, we're doing one of the cases we're profiling. It's a Florida case in which a young man was shot and killed while in the company of an off-duty corrections officer. And he was shot and killed with an officer's gun after they had an encounter, a fight. And the whole thing was handled very strangely. No evidence was taken. The crime scene, the death scene wasn't treated as a crime scene. And the coroner ruled that it was he had one ruling of suicide, and they changed it to accidental. But the gentleman, the corrections officer, whose gun was the weapon that this young man was killed with, he was sued civilly. He went to the deposition. He took the Fifth 635 times, I believe. But
wow.
They can't get the coroner to take another look. So it's the official cause of manner of death is not homicide. But we're going to be profiling that case as a lead in to the Sunday show about this whole medical examiner coroner issue.
No, so you take callers too, right? I just want to ask you that.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Denny.
Yeah.
Am I correct in thinking that you ran a program about a suicide where the guy had stabbed himself 3 times or something?
Or 14 times, 2 of them in the back.
Oh.
And then the buttocks, I should say, yeah. And that was a suicide, officially. Really scary stuff.
Was that ever remedied, or is it
nope.
still the same way?
There were outside consultants were hired, including a forensic pathologist and private investigators, and they came up that this, at the minimum, the cause of death should have gone to undetermined rather than suicide, at the very minimum. And the coroner, or I forget if it was medical examiner or coroner in that jurisdiction, but the office involved refused to even read the reports. And one of the problems is nobody seems to control medical examiners or coroners. They're kind of like their own entity, and they have no controlling body. They do what they want, and there's really no place for a family to appeal.
You know that. Can I ask you a question, Danny? That you know you're kind of like leading to an area that I get a lot of people that want to know why the defense is dragging this case on and on. Well, then I watched something on True TV the other day. It was a rerun. I don't remember the woman's name. She was a pretty blonde, murdered her boys. She was convicted, sentenced to death. She was the one that showed her spraying that funny stuff, you know, that you spray all over the kids' graves like a week later.
In Darlie Rudier case.
That's it. Okay. Now, what's come up now is something about the defense attorneys, I guess, didn't file the proper motions or enough. Like they never went into or asked for certain evidence of cuts and bruises that she had, so the jury never got to see it. So I think that in itself shows that you've got to really have a competent defense that knows how to file proper motions and stay on top of cases that they're working on. Or, you know, the person could get convicted of something perhaps they didn't do. I'm not certainly saying in that case, but don't you think that plays a role in a lot of cases where the evidence that it's an incompetent defense?
Oh
yeah.
Okay, I just need to put in temporarily. We will come back to this. Jen has a question.
It's from the chat room again. They're wanting to ask Cobra if he can say who supplied the questionable information about Robbie Middleton being Haley's dad.
What was the question again, Jan?
Who supplied the questionable information about Robbie Middleton possibly being Haley's dad?
It was no big secret. I've answered this before, but that came from my first client in the case, Johnny Sheffield. Johnny Sheffield told me to go and find this feller and ask him some questions, because while he was at the wake, or whatever you call it when they're somebody's missing, and they were all praying, this Robbie feller had been there for about 4 days, 4 nights, more so than Ronald was. And allegedly, to my client, the time was Sheffield, he said that, he goes, you know, John, I think and I believe with all that's in me that this is my child. And he never said it just once. He said it several times. And Johnny Sheffield at the time told me to go look him up. Then all of a sudden there was a change of clients, as you know, in the case where I went from working for Johnny Sheffield to working for Ruby, who was his mother-in-law. And the first form of business that I was supposed to conduct was to continue to look for Robbie Middleton and confront him as to why he thought this information to be true and all. And basically, I figured that was a daggum setup and got myself into trouble doing that, but I wasn't told to go to the courthouse and look for records. I was told to go talk to him directly. And the only Middleton I could find was his brother, Chris, who works at the state attorney's office, and then hell broke loose then, buddy. So I don't know if it was a setup. I read that in your blog. I don't know if it was a setup or not, but that was my instruction from my client, both cases, both times. Wasn't nothing on me. I didn't know none of these folks.
Okay. Thank you for the answer. They were all asking.
Hopefully I answered it, you know, I answered it truthfully to the best of my ability, because
well,
I don't know
I think
one Middleton from the next Middleton.
So it's a whole bunch of Middletons.
I guess. I never could talk to Robbie, but I sure did talk to Chris. He wasn't happy either, I'll let you know that. He wasn't none too happy.
You want to expand on that?
Well, I had first thought that maybe part of my trouble, because, you know, I had a file and I had an appointment and I had every, you know, lawful way to go get this Mr. Snodgrass feller, and I figured that being I got in trouble was part and parcel because I was looking for Robbie just simply to ask him a question. So when I found out that Chris was a deputy sheriff at one time and then he became the prosecutor's investigator, I happened to spring the question on him and said, look, I can't get a hold of your brother. Do you know where he's at? And, of course, I was asked why. And I said, well, it has come to my attention from both my clients now that apparently Robbie Middleton used to date Crystal, and they were high school sweethearts, and he believes that if not one, maybe both of her children are his. And I just, whoa, my God, he blew up like a goddamn bomb. I was like, oh, shit, I done stepped on one of them this side towards enemy. I done stepped right dead in the middle of one of those, and apparently he'd already been called onto the red carpet about this from the sheriff and everybody else, who apparently already knew something about this before I did, and either it was a red herring that they set me up with or something, I don't know. But Simon, if you ask me a question, I will try to find it out for you. And I was told to go and ask this question, and maybe it was a suicide question. I don't know, but I thought nothing of it at the time. And then, of course, when all this unraveled, nobody was very happy that I had brought that question, but it wasn't my question because I don't know none of these people. So it came from Johnny Sheffield, and Johnny Sheffield was the deputy sheriff one time, so he knows all these fellers. I wasn't there when Robbie was asking all the questions at the wake, or whatever you call that, the candle vigil, I guess it was. I wasn't there. And apparently he was there for four nights and 3 days, crying the whole damn gum time as if Haley was his child. And I had been told this by several people, but who gave the instruction to go find Robbie was Johnny Sheffield first and then Ruby second. So I just did what the heck I was asked to do, you know.
Okay, thank you.
There has been no DNA, proof about who the father is?
I immediately, when I couldn't find him, I took the question. I called up Kim Picazio, who represented Crystal, and I asked Kim, I said, Kim, not to break any trust between you and your client, any confidentialities or whatever, and she goes, no. In fact, if that had been the case, she would have been a winner. She would have been able to have pulled Butterbean out of the middle of the story, or then she would have been able to file different custody and stuff all on behalf of her client, which it would have worked beneficially towards Kim. So she went and contacted Crystal, and the word came back. I guess she had testified that he was the daddy, and that Ronald Sheffield was the daddy, and put that on the paperwork and everything, and nobody had ventured into that again. But as far as DNA, actually pulled DNA and proved the point, I don't think anybody's ever proved the point. But I later found out, of course, one of the bloggers was blogging about this, why didn't I go to the courthouse? I didn't need to go to the courthouse. All I need to do was talk to the attorney for the mother, and she said she had testified or had his name put on the document as being the daddy, so the kid to have a name, whatever, I don't know. But as far as any actual DNA being pulled and proving this, it wasn't my job or my direction to go prove anything. My direction was to go and speak to Robbie Middleton in depth as to why he thought this child possibly, or Butterbean, which is the little feller, could be his children. And that's all that I was instructed to do, not go to any courthouse, pull documents or anything else. Just go ask the man himself, you know, period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which opened up a whole damn can of worms, I might add.
Oh, yeah.
A can of worms that I wasn't prepared to try to back
Sorry
in again.
They were asking.
Hey, well, listen, I'd rather they ask a question than they come up and say, you know, I lied about something or I tried to stir up something. I don't know
exactly
one of these players from the other until I was properly introduced to them and then find out what they meant in the chain of events. And I don't know what that means still to this day. I don't know if he has any ownership in the fatherhood of this child or not, or either one of these children. I don't know. That's never been discussed since seemed like I kicked the damn – I'm still running from the damn bees that thing stirred up, man. I had a chance to go back and see how big the hive was. Shit.
Peter, this obviously is not, you know, words that you can analyze, but what do you make of this information?
Peter says, you think I'm a dumbass? Cover got into trouble. It's been lasting for 18 months. You think I'm going to try to even answer a simple question like that?
There he is.
Peter, are you still with us?
Oh.
Nope.
Did I lose you guys?
No, I'm here.
There you go.
I have that wonderful iPhone 4. It's killing us.
Yeah, right. Don't put your finger on the antenna area.
There you go.
Were you able to hear that last statement?
Yes, I was. I think it's a pretty convoluted topic, and I'm not sure what to say about it, frankly.
Well,
okay.
What does the word convoluted mean, my friend? What do you mean by convoluted?
It's a pretty. It's not something that I've had any experience with before. That this is the first time I've ever heard that. That was any question about paternity. It doesn't surprise
when
me.
When I hear the word convoluted, I come to many thoughts in my mind, and not hearing the subject before isn't one of them. It's usually convoluted means that somebody's lying or something. I just assure you this, that's what my instruction was, and I don't know who the daddy is.
No, what I mean being convoluted is that Misty has had so many relationships with so many people. Crystal,
this ain't Misty,
had,
my friend. This ain't Misty. This is Crystal.
Yeah, I was getting there.
Okay.
Crystal has had various relationships. It is a big confusion at times to me as I sit back just trying to listen and figure things out, but this is a new one to me, and it is confusing, Cobra.
I'm sorry. I apologize to be a little bit, but it bit me in the ass so bad that I want to make sure anybody that even tries to pick up the ball, they want to make sure they got the right handle on the ball. That's all.
What's convoluted is not to me, what's convoluted is what started this whole thing, what precipitated the idea that in a really complex situation that Ronald may not even be the father.
Here's what started it. There was a missing child, Haley Cummings, and they had a prayer vigil dang near every night for the longest time. And in the preceding days of her disappearance, which had been February 9th, 10th, depending on whose clock you're looking at, apparently everybody was at the first several vigils. And at the first 4 days or 3 days and 4 nights or 4 nights and 3 days, Mr. Robbie Middleton was present there holding Johnny Sheffield's hand and crying and holding his face with the other one. And he said to Mr. Sheffield, Johnny Sheffield, at that time was on March 11th, he was my client. I wasn't there and seen any of this because I got in town on March 11th, 1 month after the child, 1 month and a day after the child came up missing. And he said to me that Robbie said to him several times during that encounter there, three days, 4 nights, that he felt so bad, and this was like a part of him was missing, that he felt it in his spirit that this child was his child, and he wasn't too uncertain that Butterbean, the other little feller, wasn't his child as well, because they apparently went back and forth with each other in times of, you know, playing around, these different, you know, men's, you know, he's the daddy one night, this, that, or whatever. So Mr. Sheffield, Johnny Sheffield, told me, in no uncertain terms, where this man lived, drove me out a map to his house. He lived off back in the woods, and to go and search him out and find out and ask him some questions as to how he felt and thought and what days was he with Crystal that he would think that this would have been his child. So doing what my client said to me, and I was in a pro bono status anyway, I went to try to find this little feller. 3-4 times I made attempts at his house. No answer. Even though cars appeared to be there and everything else, it wasn't nobody coming out to talk to me. So I did some research and found out that maybe they're talking about Chris Middleton, having no idea that Chris Middleton was his brother, i.e. former deputy, i.e. also the prosecutor's investigator. So me and my dumb hillbilly ass decided to challenge him as these questions. And all I did was stirred up a bunch of bees, and when they got after me, I've never been able to go back and see how big the hive was. I don't know the DNA. I don't know who his father to who. I just know this. There's a child still missing, presumed to be dead, and that's all I know. And it sure stirred up a ruckus when they said, you know, what if he was, you know, it would have been perfect for Tim Picazio if this had been the biological father. It would have been perfect to figure that out. But apparently her client told her no, in no uncertain terms. So it was all dropped back then. And then all of a sudden it reared its head up again as to who may be the actual father. And, you know, the way these folks were acting, they didn't, none of them acted like it was their kid, to tell you the truth. So it
the part that confused me is that why would just these questions cause any type of backlash towards you?
For the simple reason that the brother of Robbie Middleton worked in the state attorney's office as their lead investigator. So I guess the movie Gone Baby Gone, a lot of people at that particular time had been watching that movie. And they started making direct lines between that movie. And, of course, they ran Geraldo out of town. So the press has run off, and they saw the police play in there and this different thing and that different thing. Then all of a sudden they started suspecting and being suspicious of everyone, including me. They figured that, you know, I must have got to town a little earlier and absconded with this child. And one crazy thing after another crazy thing was popping off. So I don't know. I don't know if it was a sick joke on somebody's part or what it was there, Peter, but I want to tell you what, I lived it. And I've been living it now for 18 months, and, brother, I want to tell you what, it is a horror story. Horror.
No, obviously the toll it's taken on you and TJ, Jan, emotionally.
What?
I mean, everybody seems to have had their hearts ripped up in one way or another, but I guess as far as the legal aspect, it's been really rough on you, Cobra.
Brother, man, I'll tell you what, it goes from one side to the next. I mean, it's a constant battle to try to keep my professional license and to do what I'm supposed to be doing, to help folks and do this. And you know what? It's just, I relate it to a biblical scenario. That's why I started believing that the child was dead, because the Bible says that the ground cries out. Blood that's in the ground cries out for vindication. And anyone who touches it, Simon said a long time ago, is like the return of the mummy or something or another. Anybody who has invested any time close up in this case has had it come on them like crazy. I mean, the divorces, the breakups, the craziness, the arrests, the this, that, and the other. I mean, show me anyone who's been on the ground in Satsuma that something, Satanville, USA is what I call it, has gotten their share of something, or maybe not their share, but gotten a pound of it, whatever. It just seems that I was very vocal. Everybody was mad at me because I paid and brought Art Harris to Satsuma so that I could get the press involved in it, so that America would not forget this little child. And I did everything humanly possible that I could do to put this child on the front page of America. And by doing
I pissed
everybody off.
I need to break in. I have one question. And it's a yes-no answer.
Uh-oh.
Could Jerome Reagan be Jeremiah Reagan be Haley's father? Yes-no.
I would say, me personally, no.
Okay, all right. We need to wrap this show up. We're running out of time. I want to go round the board and get everyone's comments. Denny. You're up.
Yes. Yes, very. I'm sorry to hear that Cobra is still having difficulties here. I thought everything had been resolved. I'm disappointed.
I need a very good lawyer, my brother, and it will get resolved.
I'll be making some contacts to see if I can steer somebody your way.
Well, let's just put it this way. There's an insurance company out there. Their net worth is about $50 million, and I think $10 million of it belongs to me because they lied to protect an accused sexual predator who now, as you've been listening, that sexual predator is in jail and ain't got no bond because of firearm charges. He lied to the feds. My deal is if you lie to the feds, you lie to your own mother.
All right.
And he lied on me, and there I go.
All right. Peter, your parting thoughts.
I still think that there's going to be resolution in the Harry Cummings case. I think there will be. It'll be in August, as CJ said, with the dates coming up. We'll know soon. So stay tuned and keep your feet fastened.
Get you a new phone, Peter.
Okay.
Can't be with no I-4. Hey, listen, call them Sony people up and say, look, you can't have no investigator with no damn phone that's working like this. Go get you another phone, brother. I got an iPhone, and I'm glad I didn't get a new one yet.
Dave, your parting thoughts. Oh, we seem to have lost Dave. So, Jan, you're up.
It's mine, huh? Okay, all I want to say is that let's pray to God that we do find Zachary Pittman and Haley Cummings, and let's pray that Kaylee Anthony gets justice in what happened to her. And I do apologize to anybody I've made mad about how I with my rant, I'll put it that way, but I'm sorry is all I can say.
Till
you
next
good
week.
Girl.
Till next week, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a great week. Lots more to talk about. Let's do it again soon. Till then, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.